Good morning. Hopefully, is that better? That little, okay, great. I'm Jenny Makita, and I am so grateful to be here. Thank you, Brad, and all of you for inviting me to come back for a second time. I was here a few years ago, and I'm so glad to be back with all of you. I also hope to meet all of your beloved animal companions later today. So please bring them out. We'll be at the Coast Guard Park at 1 o'clock today. I also want to welcome a dear friend of mine, David Sturkin, who's here with me. He actually helps co-facilitate the grief support group, and my husband, Bob, who came over from Rockford to be with us. Hi. I think it might be still doing a little funny. I don't know if this is better. Hello? Is this better, maybe? A little bit? Okay. All right. I'll try to stand just right. What I'd like to do is begin like I try to begin when I have the opportunity like this, to do, rather than a land acknowledgement, a wildlife acknowledgement. And so if you feel so inclined, please feel free to lower your head and listen to these words. We gather today in Grand Haven, Michigan, where the Grand River meets Lake Michigan, on land and waters that have never belonged to humans alone. We acknowledge the many wildlives who make their homes here, the white-tailed deer and coyote, fox and raccoon, muskrat and mink, the bald eagle, osprey, great blue heron, sandhill crane, and countless migrating songbirds, the turtles, frogs, fish, insects, and other beings whose lives unfold around us, often beyond our notice. We especially remember those whose presence here has become precarious. Beneath the waters of the Grand River lives the small and extraordinary snuffbox mussel, a species listed as endangered both in Michigan and federally, whose survival depends upon clean, flowing waters and an intricate relationship with fish. And we honor the ancient lake sturgeon, a species that has inhabited these waters since long before human memory and is now listed as threatened in Michigan. Across our many faiths and spiritual traditions, may we recognize them not simply as wildlife that enhances our scenery or serves as resources for us. They are our neighbors. They share this watershed, this shoreline, this air, and this fragile home. May our acknowledgement become more than words. May it become attention, gratitude, protection, and a renewed commitment to love our neighbors, all of them. May it be so. Thank you. So the title of today's talk or teaching is The Other St. Francis and the Saints Who Find Us, What We Discover When We Set Out Seeking Something Else. So I guess I'd love to see a show of hands if there are any former Catholics, current Catholics with us, maybe a few. Oh, great, good. Okay, I figured there'd probably be a handful. For centuries, Catholics have chosen or sometimes felt chosen by a saint whose life, struggles, or particular gifts speak to them. A patron or companion saint can become a kind of spiritual traveling companion, someone whose story offers courage, wisdom, challenge, or simply the comfort of knowing that another soul once wrestled with questions much like ours. Some people choose the saint whose name they received at confirmation. Others are drawn to a saint connected with their work or their passions.
And sometimes the relationship begins unexpectedly. A name keeps appearing, a story refuses to be forgotten, a saint seems to tap us on the shoulder again and again. Perhaps we do not always choose our saints. Perhaps now and then they choose us. I am not Catholic, and I have a checkered history with saints. In 1988, around this time of year, let me get you to this slide, I enrolled at Notre Dame Law School as a non-Catholic. Some of you may be familiar with Touchdown Jesus. If you're sitting in the stadium, you actually can see this from the stadium. I had looked for a law school to better prepare me to advocate for animals. There were no animal law programs at the time, and Notre Dame's social justice connection seemed the best fit. Shortly after school began, it became apparent the saints would be regularly interfering in my life. The law school had its own cafe, and on a seemingly regular basis, there would be a sign posted in, that it was closed in honor of some saint. I describe this period as my poo-pooing the saints era. It wasn't just that the student cafe was closed. As a non-Catholic, it was difficult to get my head around the myriad of saintly figures, including Mother Mary, who were revered seemingly as much as Jesus himself. Over the years, my heart softened. In 2009, the first year of Art Prize, I met a bronze sculptor, Mick Carlson, who channels St. Francis of Assisi. This is one of his works. He works in bronze, and this is one of a, it's a smaller version of a larger sculpture that he did. I was in seminary at the time, having come to the conclusion that a real change for animals would happen when hearts were transformed and not laws. Mick asked me if I'd consider doing a blessing of the animals near his entry, which was placed in a building lobby in the Waters Building in downtown Grand Rapids. We've done this together every year since that first year. And you can now find his works, the entire story of St. Francis, out in an outdoor St. Francis sculpture and prayer path in Grand Rapids at the Dominican Center. So each of his parts of his life is represented by a statue of this size, along with a bench and the story that goes with what was happening in Francis's life at that time. Though Francis was canonized within the Catholic tradition, his reverence for animals and vision for creation made him a beloved spiritual figure among Catholics as well as non-Catholics. And I know we talked about that at the pre-talk, especially this non-Catholic. Shortly after I started working with Mick, I bought a Mobius bracelet. You can't really see it from here, but it has a St. Francis prayer on it. And I wear it all the time. Francis invites us to widen the circle of kinship, to recognize brother sun, sister moon, and the animals with whom we share this planet, not as scenery or possessions, but as our relatives and neighbors in this sacred community of life. Several years ago, I read a book about the way of St. Francis. This is actually the book that I read. I had never heard of this. Many of you may be familiar with the Camino de Santiago, made popular by Martin Sheen's 2010 movie, The Way. The Via de Francesco, or Way of St. Francis, is a similar but less traveled pilgrimage through Tuscany and Umbria. Ancient footpaths, medieval trails, Roman roads, and Franciscan hideaways weave together in a journey inviting pilgrims to immerse themselves in the life and spirituality of St. Francis. In May of this year, I set out on a two-week, 110-mile pilgrimage from Florence to Assisi. I spoke with Brad, and he mentioned that some of you had some pilgrimage opportunities, some of you out there, so you may know a little bit about what this is like. Unlike a vacation, a pilgrimage is not about escape, but is instead an outward physical journey that mirrors an inner search for purpose, surrendering certainty and control, trusting that putting one foot in front of the other can reveal that which standing still cannot. I did not leave home because I lost my sense of vocation. For 35 years, I've been a legal advocate, not for those whose voices have been silenced, not just animals, but also children, refugee children, LGBTQ plus individuals, and incapacitated adults. And alongside that work, as was mentioned, I'm an interfaith minister and animal chaplain. Yet beneath a life devoted to advocating for others lives a quiet, persistent question that I've been grappling with as I get older. What is uniquely mine to do? The landscapes in Tuscany, back to this beautiful adventure, themselves felt like prayer. I'm going to let you see a little bit. Olive trees gnarled with centuries of wisdom were rooted deeply to the earth. Long geometric rows of vineyards prepared to flower across the rolling hills. Narrow cypress trees reaching to the heavens lined the path that encouraged both a slowing down and wonder. Before leaving, I bought a pilgrim's journal. And actually, it was on Amazon. Pilgrim's Journal, St. Francis Way 2026. I'm like, what are the odds? So I got it. On the inside cover were the words, walk slowly, breathe deeply, and let the road tell you its story. The next page featured a series of little snails to color each day beneath the phrase that said, the slow pace of the soul. Each day's page also included a space for a morning intention. At the end of day one, I'd spent the day wandering the cobbled streets of Florence. I sheepishly wrote, forgot to set one. In the days that followed, my morning intentions evolved into simple acts of trust. Trust my experience was exactly as it was meant to be. Let the universe guide me, I wrote one day. One day I wrote, it's a universe day. Another was, universe coming in hot. Eventually I stopped writing full sentences and just put universe in my morning intention line. Each morning I pulled on my toe socks. If you haven't used these are the bomb. A miraculous invention against blisters. Laced up my tennis shoes that I would later wish had been hiking boots, and stepped onto paths worn smooth by centuries of pilgrims, including Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardone, the name Francis's mother gave him. His father had been away on business, textile business in France, came back and later insisted his son's name be changed to Francesco. In Italy, I learned people rarely say Saint Francis. They simply say Francesco. His presence is woven so deeply into Italian life that his name alone is enough, something I suspect he would have preferred. Francesco remains one of the most popular names in Italy today, so it was no surprise when our mountain guide with a theology degree introduced himself. Let me show you him. That's him on the left. Sono Francesco, allora, andiamo. I'm Francis, okay, let's go. In the coming days, the lyrical cadence of his voice, of all Italian voices, would soften the hardest climbs. Leaving the sacred forest of Laverna Monastery, where St. Francis retreated regularly during his life beneath steady rain, we walked past stone villages tucked among emerald hillsides as church bells echoed on the hour. The trail marked by yellow tows. Oops, let's go back. Sorry. Oops. Sorry. The yellow tow is this one right here. I've got one here on my, it's on my earrings. It's here. And actually, the tau is not a cross. It's the last letter of the alphabet. It's something that Francis adopted because it reminded him of his stole, which looks like that. He also thought that the robes that he wore looked like they could embrace you, and that's where that comes from. So that's where we followed the tau the whole way. We wound through fields of brilliant red poppies that were in season, punctuated by sculptures of Francis in various media. We went through hermitages. This is the next piece. There were little churches all along the path. There would be nothing, and then a church, a sanctuary that he had either founded or had been dedicated to him. Even in the smallest churches in the middle of nowhere, there would be Renaissance frescoes adorning the walls. The seamless convergence of divine and human artistry was everywhere. Each evening, I colored another snail, and slowly, almost imperceptibly, my soul caught up with my body. There was no place along the Via de Francesco I anticipated more than the medieval city of Gubbio. Nestled among the green hills of Umbria, Gubbio is forever linked with the story of Francis and the wolf, which is why I chose that particular statue. A legend first recorded after about a century after his death and later included in the Little Flowers of St. Francis, where it's inspired Franciscans for centuries. According to tradition, a she-wolf terrorized the town. Francis did not approach the animal as an enemy to be killed, but as a fellow beloved being to be understood. He recognized that both the townspeople and the wolf were suffering. Fear had transformed them into adversaries. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? After Francis met with and listened to both parties, the townspeople agreed to feed the wolf, and the wolf agreed to stop attacking them and their animals. Conflict gave way to peaceful coexistence. There are several chapels devoted to the wolf, and so I included one of those pictures for you to see. The afternoon of our arrival, on a whim, I boarded the Gubbio Express. Oops, oh, it's not here. I don't think we have the Gubbio picture. Oh, well, that's okay. This was a little rubber-tired tourist train that offered a 40-minute narrated tour in 8 languages through the city's narrow, winding streets. I had seen everyone getting off and bought a ticket to get on, and I got on, and I was the only person in this 3-car train for 40 minutes going through the streets of Gubbio. As we slowly rolled past cafes with lovers dining outside in the sunshine and children waving from sidewalks, it seemed only fitting to return their greetings. I started to do like a Queen's wave. I was like, I don't know what else to do. Just beyond the beautifully preserved remains of a Roman theater that stands there today, the narrator began telling the story I had shared countless times during Blessings of the Animals. Only this time I was receiving this story of the wolf exactly where it happened. The narrator concluded, Francis brokered peace. The city of stone became the city of reconciliation. Among the most beautiful words in our spiritual vocabulary, reconciliation whispers that love can survive what once seemed impossible to mend. I was deeply moved by this city that embraced both the wolf and reconciliation as part of its identity. For a brief moment, although I didn't tell Bob this, I even imagined what it would be like to live there. Whether understood as history, allegory, or something in between, the story carries a profound spiritual truth. Much of my work in its own way, helping people meet and befriend their wolves, sometimes who those wolves are grief, sometimes their fear, guilt, loneliness, or the unbearable weight of making end-of-life decisions for our beloved animal companions. Sometimes they are the neglected, frightened, or misunderstood parts of ourselves. Ironically, Francis became a saint, was canonized just 2 years after he died in 1224, one of the fastest canonizations in Catholic history. A fast-track saint whose life was defined by slowing down, spending months each year withdrawn in caves and forests in contemplation. I suspect he would have preferred obscurity. His status as the patron saint of animals and the environment grew organically out of his well-documented reverence for nature, formally cemented over centuries of tradition, but not by papal decree. I believe he would have wanted it that way. At our final dinner in Assisi, I asked about Francis's diet. Our guide shared that there's no evidence Francis was a vegetarian. As a friar who depended entirely on begging, he had instructed his brothers to gratefully accept whatever food was offered, including meat. I had been both surprised and disappointed that eating a plant-based diet along the way of St. Francis had proved so challenging. I actually took a picture of this sign in Florence to take along the way with me to explain that I was a vegan. And this is what I did not eat, and this is what I did eat. I was grateful that I had done that, although at the time I thought, oh, this should be no problem. So that, it was challenging to not be able to eat a vegan diet, but also what was really challenging for me that night was confronting the historical reality that Francis' love for animals did not extend to abstaining from eating them. Shortly after I returned home, I was at the installation of Fountain Street Church's new pastor, Nathan Dannison. And George Hartwell did the sermon that day. Many of you may be familiar with him. He's got a lovely legacy. Talk about a saint. He began his sermon with a simple observation. Theology is contextual. Coming to terms with Francis as a carnivore reminded me that every saint is also a child of their own time. Very recently, I discovered another Francis. Now we get to the name, the title of the talk. Saint Francis of Paola. Born 2 centuries after Francis of Assisi. Francis of Paola had been connected to St. Francis of Assisi from childhood. His parents had prayed for the intercession of Francis of Assisi during his childhood illness and promised that if he recovered, he would spend a year wearing the Franciscan habit. He fulfilled that promise at a Franciscan convent before undertaking the same pilgrimage that I did to Assisi at age 14 with his parents. Tradition tells us that St. Francis of Paola loved a little lamb named Martinello. When Martinello was killed and his remains cast into a furnace, Francis of Paola stood before the fire and called his beloved companion by name, Martinella, come out, and the little lamb came forth alive. Another tradition shares that he also cherished a trout. That's what this picture is. It's a statue of a trout named Antonella, who lived in the monastery pond. According to legend, a visiting priest caught Antonella, cooked her, and when Francis sent a friar to retrieve her, the priest angrily threw her to the ground, breaking her into pieces. Francis gently gathered her remains, returned them to the water, and prayed. At once, the trout became whole and began swimming joyfully again. Whether we receive these stories as miracles, legends, or sacred metaphors, their spiritual truths are striking to me. All animal lives matter. This Saint Francis founded the Order of Minims, whose members embraced a plant-based diet grounded in the ethic of nonviolence toward all of God's creatures. Original Franciscans take three vows. If you see a Franciscan brother, you'll see it. You'll see knots tied on their, just lost the name for it, but anyways, there's a fancy name, fancy Catholic name for this. But there'll be three knots if they've taken all three vows, which is poverty, chastity, and obedience. In fact, my Tao, which Mick brought back from Assisi for me, has three knots in it, three that are representative of those vows. Minim brothers sport a fourth knot on their belts, and that is the commitment to what some of us would know as a Lenten diet or a plant-based diet. More than 500 years before the word vegan began, they were already living this ethic. And the order continues today. There is a monastery out in LA of Minims. And fun fact for you beer drinkers, I actually spent my first year of college in Munich. In 1634, the order founded the Munich brewery, Paulaner. That's where Paulaner beer comes from. I like to believe St. Francis of Assisi, if he were alive today and witnessed the cruelty of factory farming, would have been appalled and chosen differently. But St. Francis of Paola, even then, invited us into a deeper truth well before the advent of factory farming. For him, the issue was not simply how animals were treated before they reached our plates. It was whether they belonged on our plates in the first place. My new Saint Francis recognized the sacredness of every living being. He encouraged us to live in such a way that, in the words of my favorite Christmas carol, O Holy Night, every soul feels its worth. The Via di Francesco did not tell me exactly where I was going next. It instead reminded me to befriend what I perceive from my vantage point as uncertainty and trust the wisdom of the divine universe that has been guiding me all along. I went looking for St. Francis of Assisi, and somewhere along the way, I now have, and I don't know where that went, but I have a pendant now with St. Francis of Paola that I also wear. Would you pray with me? Holy One, source of life and love, may each of us find a saint for the journey, however we understand that word. Perhaps one whose name appears on a church calendar, whose story has been carried across centuries, perhaps an ancestor, a teacher, a friend, a poet, a prophet, a musician, a troublemaker, or a quiet soul whose goodness changed the world without the world ever knowing their name. Perhaps even a creature of another kind, one who taught us loyalty or tenderness, wonder or wildness, grief or unconditional love. Send us companions who unsettle us as well as comfort us, who ask more of us than we thought we could give, who widen the boundaries of compassion and help us recognize the sacred where we had not thought to look. May we find someone to hold on to when the path becomes uncertain, someone whose life whispers, keep going, there is another way to live. And may we become such companions for one another, living with such courage, kindness, and reverence that someone coming after us might find in our lives a little more light for their own journey. May it be so. Thank you.